news, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Somebody wants to know where the people are getting the milk crates. Mm-hmm. Where are they these days? If you want to do the milk crate challenge, because it looks like those people are stacking up. Looks like they've got a dozen or more, mm-hmm. each of these people.
Yeah, where do they get all the milk crates? That's a great question. Maybe they're walking until they find someone who has fallen from the milk crate challenge and then take their milk crates.
Gather them all up.
Gather those.
It is 8 minutes after 8 o'clock, FM Talk 106.5. It's Tuesday morning. Time to talk with Quinn Hillier from the Washington Examiner and quinnhillier.com. Good morning, Quinn.
Good morning. And guys, forget the milk crates. I'm holding out for beer crates.
Beer crates, yes. These people end up looking like they've been drinking beer when they finally. I don't know if you've seen any of these videos. It's pretty crazy.
I have not.
Oh, yeah.
Heard
yeah.
About them.
It's worth
your time to search those out this
really
morning.
It really is.
Quinn, while we have you on, I want to get your take first, and we have a lot to talk to today on this municipal election Tuesday. But with the New Orleans Saints hosting their first home game last night, it was just a preseason game, but the vaccine passport / negative COVID test mandate went into effect, and for Saints home games this year, you have to either show that you're vaccinated or show that you've tested negative over the last 3 days. I don't think I've gotten your take yet on the stadium deciding to do that.
Well, I did not go last night, so I do not know how efficiently it worked, but the Saints and the league have every right to do that in order to make sure that that they're protecting everybody, protecting themselves, also protecting themselves from lawsuits. Because, again, we still haven't passed a national law giving lawsuit relief from companies, you know, that somebody might say, well, it's your fault. I was in your establishment when I caught COVID. They have every right to do it. I don't know whether it worked efficiently. I'm sure there'll be lots of reports about that that I can read today. But a private business can do, even one that serves a vast public like this, a private business has the right to do what it wants for health and safety.
Now, do they have more of that right now since the FDA gave a full approval to Pfizer's COVID-19
Absolutely.
Vaccine?
Absolutely. And look, I actually know of medical personnel who would not get the vaccine until it got formal FDA approval, and now they're going to get it. I mean, for some reason, even though if you really understand the process, it was essentially approved, you know, a couple months ago, and the rest was just paperwork. But they were waiting for that. Well, now they've gotten it, and if even healthcare workers were waiting, imagine how many other people were waiting as well. There's there's something about an official imprimatur that says, okay, now I know it's safe. So I think it'll help.
You know, I completely spaced and forgot about the liability aspect of all this. And while there have been state laws passed, like here in Alabama, remember during Governor Ivey's State of the State address, that was like the first thing she brought up was making sure that
right.
businesses weren't liable for things like this. But in some states where it's not a law, I guess if someone could point back and say, hey, there's this big outbreak at the Saints game and so-and-so
Bingo.
Caught it and so-and-so died, there's a possibility they could be liable. So that's a great point. Yeah.
Plaintiff's attorneys will look out for their clients and will try to recover from anybody that they can. Will try to recover damages, and so the lawsuit part of it is a very, very big part of it. And unless and until we protect businesses from lawsuits for things that they really can't control, then they're going to be wary and they're going to do things like this vaccine passport.
So where does college football line up with all this? I just did the story that Hancock Whitney is expected to be sold out for the Jags. I think you're going to have huge crowds at Alabama and Auburn. What's up there?
I don't know. I mean, look, every outfit, every organization is going to do things differently. It's certainly less likely to have a major outbreak outdoors
okay.
than in the Superdome,
yeah.
but you know, know, in close quarters, it can spread outdoors too. So, look, we'll just have to wait and wait and watch. But I think people need to be patient with those on the other side, whatever side you're on. Be patient with the decisions of the others. Everybody's trying to muddle through this, trying to figure it out the best that they can. Some of us do not like big government mandates. That's the force of, you know, that's vaccinated or whatever at the force of a gun, in effect.
So we're going to see more of this.
Private organizations, give them a break. They're trying to do their best.
Yeah, so we're going to find more private organizations are going to mandate in some fashion after this full approval, right?
Yeah, I'm sure of it.
So let's talk. Is it going to be a super spreader at the polls today? I'm sorry.
Great.
Sorry to be a downer.
No, fantastic segue there, Dan. There are really, you know, some big time elections in Mobile today with the municipal elections. Of course, five candidates for the mayoral race, including the incumbent, Sandy Stimson. And then I just counted one more time in the seven city council races. We have 27 candidates and people that have been following this for a long time, so they can't remember the last time we had that many candidates for city council. But let's talk a bit about the mayoral race, Quinn. And you have the incumbent, Mayor Stimson, looking for a third term. You also have longtime city councilman Fred Richardson, Mobile Municipal Judge Carlos Finley, Michael Young, and Donovette Eli. Your thoughts as we head into the polls today?
Well, my thoughts are that Sandy Stimson is clearly the favorite, and there's good reason for that, which I'll outline in a second. But he's raised and spent by far the most money. He's done well in the little things I hear behind the scenes in the polls. He has really worked to try to put out a unifying message. And the others have not caught fire. And, you know, I say that I have great respect for some of these other people. And Carlos Finley, I've spent some time with him, good guy. But Sandy Stimson goes into this as the overwhelming favorite. There's a reason for that. I just in the 2 minutes before I went on, I started jotting down his accomplishments. I mean, major things that we've talked about in the city for a long time. And I wrote a dozen down in just 2 minutes. I mean, first of all, he did bring a cruise ship back. We were without a cruise ship for 5 or 6 years. The bonded indebtedness, we were at our limit. Now we've cut it nearly in half. The revenue fund, the rainy day fund, in effect, went from something, it was like less than $10 million, now it's up nearly at $100 million. So we're in great financial shape as a city. He's gone out and really worked to clean up dilapidated properties, condemned them, brought them back up to life. We're finally got access to the bay again by that purchase and trade agreement, and we're going to have a bayfront park. We're going to move the airport to downtown. We've, of course, fixed lots of infrastructure, states, parks, streets and parks. We got new fire engines, new police cars out the wazoo, basically. We've given raises to police and fire and basically the whole city government. The crime cameras, people don't realize just how cutting edge we are. The overall crime has ticked up and down a little bit, but we're solving the crimes a lot better because we've got systems in place that let us track criminals, and we're doing a much better job of that. And I could go on, but basically this is a record that he can tell to the public and has told to the public that really is impressive.
He's also got a demeanor about him that I think a lot of people are comfortable with.
Oh, very. I mean, look, he is a genuinely nice guy, a genuinely caring guy. And look, I haven't agreed with everything he's done. There's some things that I wish he had done that he didn't. Everybody's going to disagree with the decision here or there. But if you disagree, he looks at you with a smile on his face, basically, and says, "I'm sorry we disagree, and, you know, tell me again what it was that you disagree with, and, you know, and maybe I'll go back and tweak something." I mean, he's always open to suggestions. He might fight the suggestions after he hears them again, but he's open to them, and he doesn't hold grudges, and so, you know, I think people just like the man.
And when we get back from the break, Quinn, I want to discuss that fundraising hall and how important is that in local races like this mayoral race. Plus, remember years ago, Mayor Stimson said he wanted to make Mobile the safest and most business and family-friendly city in the United States by 2020. It doesn't appear that that's the case as we now sit in 2021, and I think some opponents capitalizing on that statement from nearly a decade ago. Get into that when we get back.
Quinn Hillier, quinnhillier.com and the Washington Examiner, on with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig again this morning on this Tuesday. Again, Thursday morning at this time, the last 8 o'clock. We do expect Texas Congressman Dan Crenshaw to be our guest on Mobile Mornings. It is 17 after 8 on FM Talk 106.5.
Thanks, Kane. 822, the segment of Mobile Mornings brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. It's the world's largest junk removal service, but a locally owned franchise. And Trey Bennett and the crew doing great work on both sides of the bay. Let me give you some ideas, some things that could be considered junk that they would take away from your house or workplace. Say you have appliances you don't use anymore. Maybe a bicycle you bought years ago that you ended up not riding as much as you thought, and it's not worth reselling. They'll take that. Carpeting and rugs. Construction waste. Maybe you've been getting some work done on the house or the business. You want Got Junk to come and take care of that. Furniture. Hot tubs they'll even take, Dan. Mm. And mattresses and box springs. They'll take just about anything that you have for them. And it's a very easy step. It's very easy to sign up and have them come out to your house and take care of the junk for you. They price you up front. So that means they won't charge you after the fact with all these surprise charges once they leave your home. And it's very convenient to set up a time with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. You get them on the line, you find a time that works for you and a window that works for them, and they'll show up in that window and take care of your junk for you. So why sweat in that heat in the middle of the day when you can get 1-800-GOT-JUNK to come out and take care of it for you? Give them a call today, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, or go online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
Author of the Matt Jones Trilogy, you can buy on Amazon.com. It's Quinn Hillier from quinnhillier.com and the Washington Examiner.
So, Quinn, as we discuss this mayoral race, and polls opened about an hour and a half ago, they close at 7 o'clock tonight. We have interviews with with many of the candidates for city council and mayor on our website, fmtalk1065.com. The opponents for Mayor Sandy Stimson, and the two that have made the most noise this election cycle that I think would have the most realistic chance, if any, to beat the incumbent, City Councilman Fred Richardson and also Mobile Judge Carlos Finley. If there's any one thing I think they could go after the mayor on, and they've certainly gone after him on a few different topics, but crime in the city. And capitalizing on what the mayor said about 5-6 years ago when he said Mobile will become the safest, most business and family-friendly city in America by 2020. Well, that did not happen, and there's been a lot of, many murders this year. We're over 30 and just over halfway through the year. Do you think that that gained some votes for some of the opponents of Mayor Stimson, the crime issue?
Yeah, I mean, the family-friendly and business-friendly, we're well on our way. Crime has gone up and down. It has not gone up here this year as much as it has in the rest of the country. I mean, there's a nationwide crime wave, mm-hmm. But it has ticked up again here, and it's something that's hard to get a hold of. Again, what has improved is the rate of solving the crimes and you know, tracking down the criminals, that's because they really have this amazing state-of-the-art system where they've got security cameras all over the place, and so if there's a crime in Neighborhood X, that, you know, there's basically only one entrance and out of Neighborhood X, they've got a camera at that the entrance to that neighborhood, and so they can go back over the tape and see the license plates and say, okay, well, I that is a license plate that doesn't live there, and so let's look into that further, et cetera, et cetera. So they're doing a better job of solving these things, and eventually that should help get the crime rate down. But right now, yeah, we've had 30 murders, and that's, I mean, where I'm from, in New Orleans originally, you know, that's nothing. When I lived in D.C., that's nothing. But for Mobile, mm-hmm. that's, you know, that's more than we certainly want.
Yeah, and it's the highest we've seen in quite a while, at least the pace we're on right now. And regarding the fundraising for these campaigns and the incumbent raising far more money than Finley or Richardson, Sandy Stimson's raised more than $1.5 million for this election. Finley raised almost $50,000 and then loaned his campaign another $21,000. And Councilman Richardson said he raised right around $43,000. So we're looking at, you know, 20 to 30 times more money raised by Mayor Stimson. Is money raised in a local race like this less important than in, say, a congressional or Senate race?
Not necessarily. I mean, you know, the mechanics of campaigning are the same in a lot of ways. Now, in a single district race, it might be like a small district, like a city council district, where spending money on TV might not be, you know, might not be cost effective because, you know, the TV range is going to cover many, many counties, and you've got this one tiny little district. So it doesn't help to have a lot of money for TV for small districts. But for somewhere, you know, as big as Mobile, you know, you buy TV commercials, and you got the other guy can't. You're at an advantage. So yeah, the money definitely helps.
These council candidates have really spent a lot of money on this very radio station. Mm-hmm. If you've noticed.
Again, radio is less expensive than TV. A lot of the big races you're talking about, a lot of the cost goes into TV ads, which are very, very expensive, and that's where the difference does come in.
Are we going to have any surprises at the end of the day, or is it going to be? How do you project this? Let's just start with the mayor's race.
Well, I would think that Mayor Stimson wins re-election without a runoff, but these other council races, you got some real Donnybrooks out there. I mean, I would probably expect the incumbents to win in some of the districts. I think Gina Gregory and Joel Daves are thought to be favorites. The real Donnybrook is in District 2, where LaVon Manzi, who's the council president, has a whole bunch of challengers, including some fairly well-known ones. And you know, you got a lot of energy there from all sides, and a lot of positive energy. And so, you know, who's the best candidate? I don't know, but it's going to be a runoff.
Quinn, thanks for your time today. We appreciate it every Tuesday chatting with us, and we'll talk to you in 1 week's time.
Thanks a lot, and have a good time with Congressman Crenshaw tomorrow. He'll be interesting.
Yeah, that'll be on Thursday, by the way.
Oh, Thursday.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thanks, Quinn. That's Quinn Hillier, quinnhillier.com, Washington Examiner. And on Twitter at Quinn Hillier. And when we get back this next half hour, first we got to talk about ivermectin because we discussed that some this morning.
Yes.
But Jocko Willink, a former Navy SEAL, put out a video of what he would be saying about Afghanistan if he were president. And it's a very passionate response, and I want you to hear it when we get back.
It's on the way. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. Name of our show, followed by the Jeff Ford Show, followed by Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan. So the FDA has reiterated a warning against the use of ivermectin as a COVID-19 treatment amid growing reports of individuals taking the drug often used to treat parasitic worms in animals. That's what it's primarily used for. The FDA, but I guess it is also, let's see, it is also, doctors do prescribe it for
scabies.
For a dose.
But also I think that some have been, some have been prescribing it for COVID, apparently. And it echoes the hydroxychloroquine thing from very early on in the pandemic, where the national media and a lot of the political leaders were, you know, treating people like idiots that, that would even think to take a drug like that. And ivermectin has kind of, you know, gone the same route. And we had a number of people text, a few that said they've had it prescribed to them, and that ivermectin's been around for at least 50 years initially to treat scabies. And this also came on the heels of us talking about that walkout that 75 doctors in, I think it was Miami, they did a walkout because of the non-vaccinated, they said, that are coming into their hospital. This person said, every doctor who walked out should be flipping burgers today. How dare they not treat the sick? Fire them all and take their credentials. essentials. And then regarding ivermectin, Jason said ivermectin was prescribed for scabies. Leo said it's been used for 50 years, not developed for animals. Leo says it saved India, where it was prescribed for COVID-19. Another text here, Michael says it's prescription required with the correct dosage for human use. Now, Leo said the correct dosage apparently is like around 150 micrograms. A one-time dose, and what did you say the number was for, like, was it 500 grams or
well,
something like that?
I don't know that I've got that, but I do know. So
because it's for horses and
right.
livestock.
So if you're taking the ivermectin that's used for livestock, you would be putting yourself in danger, is obviously the case. Animal drugs are often highly concentrated because they are used for large animals like horses and cows, which can weigh a lot more than we do.
What?
A ton more, reads an agency webpage. Such high doses can be highly toxic in humans. So anyway, it's got to do with the amount.
Yeah.
It's not the drug itself, but the amount that you would put in your body.
Yeah, and apparently a lot of people know about ivermectin on the text line, so there you go. People wondering if we're really having Dan Crenshaw on Thursday, and the answer is he's booked.
Yeah.
So looking forward to that conversation sure.
I've got to check back. They've been very, very generous with with this appointment. It was going to be today, then he had to meet with McCarthy with some a bit of a bigger issue than talking to Dan and Dalton. I get it. So right now we've moved it to Thursday, and we'll let you know when we have a confirmation of someone like Dan Crenshaw. Mm-hmm. Things can come up, obviously, but we'll get him on at some point. Right now we're looking at Thursday morning at 8 o'clock.
Also, of course, polling opened at 7 a.m. for the Mobile elections today, and I want to know how the polling place is looking for you. David said he was at Tree of Life Church, formerly known as the Independent Methodist Church. He said he was number 140, so it's probably over 150 now. The number of people that have voted. How's turnout looking for you? And if you can recall the last municipal elections we had, how does it compare? I'd love to hear that. By the way, speaking of Dan Crenshaw coming on, we've got a special guest in here.
Breaking news.
Sean Sullivan in.
Breaking
on
news.
Mobile Mornings.
2.5 minutes this morning at E.R. Dixon.
Two and a half minutes.
Wow.
Did they have the electronic poll book?
Yes. Yeah. Like they had last time. So, yeah. I mean, from the time I opened the gymnasium doors to the time I was coming on out, 2.5 minutes, I timed it.
So, is that good or bad?
It's real good. I mean, it's like time.
Does it mean no one else is voting, though?
Well, there were people there, but it was like, first of all, municipal election, you know, not as many people turning out, but also moved through pretty efficiently. I mean, you know the drill. There's no real, like, go up, get your... You know, take your scan, go get your ballot. It shouldn't take you in municipal elections. You got two people on the ballot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It shouldn't take you a lot of time with the Scantron.
No amendments.
Put it in the machine, get your sticker, and go.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, 2.5 minutes.
Sean
Sullivan with I don't know that that's the case with everybody out there right now. At different. What did David say? He was.
Yeah, David said he was just about. He was number 140 when he went through. So I'm not sure how long it took him.
Okay.
But maybe it went quickly with these new electronic. Poll books, and I'm glad they got the practice during the presidential election last year to practice for the municipal. So with Congressman Crenshaw coming in on Thursday, he was a Navy SEAL, right?
Yes.
In his pre-political life.
Yes.
And so he is certainly going to have a take worth listening to regarding Afghanistan. And he even wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal just a couple days ago about our wars, not just Afghanistan, but mainly talked about that. Another famous retired Navy SEAL, Jocko Willink. He's a big-time podcaster now. I'm sure many of you out there have heard of Jocko Willink and have listened to some of the things he said. He's all about discipline, leadership, and doing hard things. That's kind of what mm-hmm. he's about. And he is certainly someone worth listening to in regards to this withdrawal from Afghanistan. And he put out a video. And now, bear with me, it's about 3 minutes long, 3.5 minutes long. But I think it's very worth listening to what Jocko Willink had to say. He puts himself in the shoes of the president. And he's basically saying, if I were president, this would be my address to the nation in regards to the withdrawal from Afghanistan. So here you go, Jocko Willink, a retired Navy SEAL, on if he were president, what would he say?
Good evening. I wanted to give you an update on the current situation in Afghanistan. As you know, we were set to leave Afghanistan this month. And as we began the final drawdown, I made some critical errors. Namely, I underestimated the strength of the Taliban, and I overestimated the strength and capability of the friendly Afghan forces. This was my fault. And due to my mistake, the Taliban has taken control of Afghanistan. There are reports now that ISIS and Al-Qaeda are working alongside them. Unfortunately, there are tens of thousands of Americans on the ground there, as well as friends and allies of America on the ground. And these people, Americans and our allies, are all stranded. And that is my fault. But they will not be stranded for long. In the next 48 hours, America will be in control of most major airports in Afghanistan. Any resistance we meet from the Taliban or otherwise when we seize these airports will be destroyed completely and without mercy. From those airports, we will conduct rapid strike rescue missions until we have recovered and evacuated all our citizens, allies, and friends. Any person that interferes with these operations will be killed. We will also recover or destroy all aircraft, vehicles, weapons, and sensitive equipment that we left behind. Any person utilizing, guarding, or located in close proximity to these weapons or equipment will be killed. Once we have evacuated all friendly personnel and recovered or destroyed the weapons and equipment left behind, we will depart Afghanistan. But we will continue to monitor everything that happens in Afghanistan through our ground and airborne surveillance equipment. Terrorist training camps or activity will be targeted and destroyed. Gross violations of human rights will be stopped through overwhelming force. And any group in Afghanistan fighting for freedom, liberty, and basic human rights will be supported through special operations forces and ruthless precision air power. We will continue that dedicated support until the enemy is no longer a threat to humanity or to the good people of Afghanistan. May God bless America. And may God have mercy on the souls of our enemy, because we will not. That is all.
So there you go. That was, I know that was a long piece of audio, but I don't know. Something about that last night just struck me in a way that I wish our political leaders would speak. And I don't think we can expect Joe Biden or Kamala Harris to come out and say anything near that. But I also don't think in this political climate we will have a president or anyone in that high of leadership come out and admit they've made a mistake regarding anything.
Yeah, that was a lot to take in. The fact that he first, as role-playing as president, the first thing he said was, it was my fault. Completely my fault. I misread the situation. My fault. We didn't get that.
No.
Everything that followed, of course, we didn't get any of that.
No.
And so as a nation, it is, I think that the opportunities for us to be inspired by our leaders seem to be far and few between.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of fantasy that guy would be the president of the United States in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But it does give us an idea of how leadership really works.
And if you're one of the American allies who's stranded in Afghanistan right now, and you were promised a ticket to America, I would have to imagine that would be much more assuring, hearing something like that coming from the president, rather than the words that have been said here after the last week.
And the giggles.
And the giggles from the vice president. Yeah. Not a good look.
846 FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig. Morning, y'all. Feel free to leave us a text at 343-0106 or call.
Thank you, Kane. 852 on this here radio show, Mobile Mornings.
Yes.
FM Talk 106.5. And this segment brought to you by the personal injury lawyers Tobias, McCormick, and Comer. They serve Mobile, Alabama, and of course, the surrounding areas. And what a track record of success for TMC lawyers. They work each client's case personally from the start to the finish, which means they won't hand your case over to another lawyer that you don't know at some other law firm. And at TMC, they've handled hundreds of personal injury cases, a combined 70 years of experience among the three, and they've recovered over $45 million for their clients. So if you've been injured in an accident, maybe due to a defective product, a trucking accident or a car accident, maybe even a maritime injury, which is one of their specialties at Tobias McCormick & Comer, a workplace accident or other negligence, give them a call today for a free consultation. 251-432-5001. That's 432-5001 and online at tmclawyers.com.
Dan Brennan and Dalton Ortwig at 8:53, 7 minutes away from 9 o'clock. Jeff Porcio on the way.
Yes, another great Jeff Porcio on the way. And he'll have Dan Gaynor with the Media Research Center on, also former U.S. Representative Parker Griffith, current State Senator Jim McClendon, and former State Senator and also candidate for State Auditor Rusty Glover will be on in the third hour. So looking forward to that.
Very good.
So earlier today, Dan, you brought up the milk crate challenge.
Yes.
That's taken the internet by storm.
Yes.
And I think I showed it to you yesterday morning. It was like Monday morning, the first thing I walk in with is a video of somebody falling and falling hard in this milk crate challenge.
I don't know why that's funny. I don't know why it's funny. It's funny.
To me, it's funny because it's
themselves.
It's totally self-inflicted.
Exactly.
And it's so stupid because you know what's going to happen.
You know,
right?
What the end's going to be.
Yeah. I don't know if even, you know, if Simone Biles tried the milk crate challenge, I think she would fall up on five milk crates.
She would wipe out.
She would definitely wipe out. And I would still laugh watching that. So we were talking about the milk crate challenge, and one of the questions Dan had was, well, where are they getting all these milk crates from? And I think Buford tries to give us an answer here on the voicemail. Let's see if I can, let's see. Buford, are you there?
Morning, fellas. This here's Buford.
Okay.
Y'all asking where people are getting these daggum milk crates for some other silly internet challenge? I'll tell you where they're getting them from. They're stealing them out the back of grocery stores and convenience stores. I got a buddy of mine that works in the grocery business, and he's telling me that milk crates are walking off daily. I mean, you can't buy them things anywhere, so you got these youngsters stealing them. A lot of times these vendors will stack up pallets and various other crates in the back of grocery stores for when the big truck comes around to load them back to the milk plant. And people are walking off with them for another silly, goofy internet challenge. Just another unforeseen consequence of an internet challenge. Stolen milk crate. Anyway, you fellas have a good day.
There you go. A minute and 10-second message from Buford when probably could have taken 5 seconds, but I enjoyed the ride.
Well, and again, there's the sound effect of all the people falling on the milk off the milk crates. But it's like, how does that become the thing?
Mm-hmm.
How does that become what you now? Everybody's like, I guess if are milk crates that available where anybody can do it? I'm saying no.
Yeah, I mean it's been a minute since I've seen a milk crate.
Yeah,
and I'm preparing for a big move. I could use some milk crates, and I certainly wouldn't be, you know, doing the milk crate challenge on top of them. But I encourage you, if you need a good laugh today and you love slapstick comedy, just Google.
Almost, I would say unintended slapstick comedy, but they got to know what their fate is when they're wobbling up the second or third crate.
And this comes as, you know, the hospitals, certainly here in the South, I don't know about the rest of the nation, but all they're doing is telling people that they have no more room in the emergency room.
Right.
And then you have people that are certainly suffering injuries that would require a visit to the emergency room. And what do you say when you get there? You know, they're building ICU rooms in the hallways,
yeah.
And you're going to show up, and they're going to say, "What's wrong with you?" You know, I was trying the milk crate challenge, and I snapped my arm in half, and now I need somebody to come look at me.
That guy when Vicky went in to get to have your second baby.
Yes.
I remember there's a story about a guy in the ER in Providence,
the waiting room, yeah, and Spring Hill,
and he looked. The milk crate challenge wasn't the rage then, but what exactly was
December of last year. So I think it was, you know, maybe Christmas break. We got in there. Actually, it was a couple weeks before Christmas. And there's this guy in the waiting room. And we're sitting in the waiting room in the ER. And his arm was, I think, broken in half. And he was in some pain.
And squealing.
And this was at like 1 a.m. in the morning.
Wow.
So I'm thinking, you know, this guy must have been trying some drunk antics and ended up breaking his arm. Because you don't just break your arm at 1 in the morning, right?
No.
If you're a grown person, unless you fall downstairs, which I guess is possible, but let's just say the way they were acting, he and his wife in the emergency room, I don't think that they were asleep at the time when he suffered this accident.
Alcohol may have been involved in the man screaming about his arm.
And may have been involved in a lot of these milk crate challenges.
That's what I'm wondering, too. Are they, from what you see, are people going up on these milk crates completely sober?
I don't know. That would be your best chance of success, to be sober trying it, but I'd have to knock a few back before I gave it a shot, that's for sure.
All right.
Also, special report.
Yes.
Remember back in March, we were talking about the Ever Given blocking the Suez Canal,
mm-hmm.
and everyone was so angry at them for, you know, running it aground, and no one could get in or out. Well, they gave it another shot this last week, the Ever Given back in the Suez Canal. And everyone, they successfully passed through the waterway. This happened last Friday. The Ever Given made it in and, I believe, out of the Suez Canal without incident.
I'm surprised the Ever Given was ever given another chance
I was too.
To get within 300 miles of the Suez Canal.
Do you think they still had the same captain on board?
No.
Or the pilot, whatever they call them, that are
no.
taking those big...
And they took it to some welding shop and had it...
fixed.
They had it fabricated. It was a little bit smaller. Okay, Jeff Poor on the way next?
Yeah, Jeff Poor Show coming up in minutes.
Dan and Dalton again tomorrow, beginning at 6 a.m. on FM Talk 106.5.